Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690. Hockey insider Pierre Maguire, brought to you by the Old Orchard Pub. Five locations, with a sixth now open in Chattahoochee, and by Dagwood Sandwiches and Salads.
In Washington, D.C. in the springtime, how are you, Pierre Maguire?
Very well, Mitch. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are the cherry blossoms looking?
They're wet today.
Oh, a lot of rain?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Today would have been a bad day for a fickle flyer to fly from New York to Washington.
Oh, so it's not just rain. It's like bad.
It's a lot. Yeah. Cold front with a lot of bad winds and rain. And yeah, all good. Safe and sound.
Sounds like a good night for the Iron Horse.
No hockey tonight. I'll just stay at my room and do homework tonight. I'll be cramming tonight.
Oh, of course. Why would you go to the Iron Horse? There's no hockey.
No hockey.
It's no hockey to watch.
That's right.
Oh, man. All right. So it doesn't look, you know, as much as everything seemed to look and sound good yesterday about Max Pacioretty, as you just heard, not quite as good. Didn't take part in any contact drills. Mm-hmm. And it's looking more and more like he's going to miss game one.
Oh, I'm just going to caution everybody. In the playoffs, don't expect to get truthful reporting on injury situations. Sometimes there'll be a lot of disinformation. I am not, and I refuse to partake in any injury reporting in the playoffs. I've told you that for a lot of years, and because it's gotten worse in terms of what teams do. And I'm not saying the Canes are doing anything bad, but we'll see. Don't expect him to be back, but don't expect him to be back. I'm just.
No, I understand. I understand your stance here, but the fact is he was on the ice with his teammates, but no contact. So tomorrow is game day. It would be highly unusual, would it not be, for a guy who hasn't been in any kind of contact drill to suddenly jump into the first game of the playoffs?
No, that wouldn't be unusual at all.
Really?
Not at all.
Okay.
You think Patrick Kane's taking contact? Guys don't get hit very much in practice that are elite offensive players. Hate to tell the fans, but that's just the reality. You don't see a lot of contact in NHL practices. It's not football. It's a totally different equation. I mean, they play, depending on the league, between 16 and 18 games. We play 82.
But you are talking about a concussion here, in all likelihood.
Is that what it was called?
No, it hasn't been called anything. It's upper body.
Okay, that's why I'm not doing that.
Pierre, he had a concussion.
I don't know.
He had a concussion.
Okay.
That's, you know, so if he, if.
I trust you. I trust
so
you.
So if I'm he had a, does that change your view on what might or might not happen tomorrow if it is, in fact, a concussion?
If it's a concussion and he can't pass a baseline test, then he won't play. It's that simple. And I trust the Canadiens doctors so much. They are above reproach or beyond reproach. I would never doubt anything they would tell me from the Montreal Canadiens side of things, but. If you are telling me it's a concussion and he has not passed the baseline test, then he will not play tomorrow. It's that simple.
All right. How does that change, if it does, the overall, when you're handicapping this series, how does that change if it does? It's got to change something about it, right?
Oh, for sure. It makes it a lot more difficult for the Canadiens to win. There's no question, because Max is such an important offensive player for them. But I also think, and I shared this theory with you yesterday, the Canes will do their homework on Andrew Hammond. And so this will be the first time that Andrew Hammond's ever played in an NHL playoff game, number one. And number two, when you get scrutinized, and I've done it for a living, so I know what you can do to somebody, you can ruin their career and ruin their reputation pretty fast if you break them down or find one characteristic that's flawed. And I'm sure Stefan Waite's probably going over all kinds of things. And if you can find that weakness in that goalie, you can light them up pretty good, even if you don't have Pacioretty. So that's the one thing. Price has been through this kind of stuff before. So people have tried to break him down. People have tried to find that characteristic that's weak. I'll use a case in point. Do you remember Jim Carrey that played for the Washington Capitals?
Sure.
Do you remember how quick his career ended after the playoff series with the Pittsburgh Penguins? Because Rick Keogh, who was a great goal scorer in the National Hockey League, found that he could not move laterally when you came down the wings. So what the Pittsburgh Penguins did, and you can go watch tapes of that series if you want, they'd come down the wings, they would pump a shot, he would freeze, and then they'd pass the puck cross ice, and they scored at will. And they lit this guy up, and that guy was never the same player again, ever.
Well, it's quite clear Andrew Hammond is not the most graceful of goaltenders with his lateral movement. That's you know, from the small amount of times. Well, how many total games has he played? I probably have seen maybe 2/3 of them. He doesn't move very well from side to side. But as Ray Ferraro pointed out an hour or so, he battles. He does battle to get there. It's not like he gives up on plays. But
no,
technically, he's not strong in that regard. Yeah.
He does not give up on anything, and that's why, again, you have to find the characteristic that's a flaw for him and try to expose it. And this will be the first time that that happens because he's never been broken down like this. That's where this is, again, this is a different season for a reason. You try to break players down, you try to break coaches down, you try to break systems down, and that's why you got a lot of smart people running around, spending a lot of time in airplanes and breaking down teams and breaking down systems and then reporting back to their teams and their coaches what they need to do.
You know, Pierre, it's one thing to say you're going to do something if you have a game plan. It's another thing to execute it since hockey happens at such a high speed. Can you take us into what a meeting with Stefan Waite and the coaching staff trying to break down a goaltender, what that meeting would sound like?
Probably what it would be more videotape and you would show if you detected a flaw, Mitch Gallo, in the player, you would show why that flaw happens when a team attacks him. Let's just say, for instance, there were a lot of people when he played that thought Patrick Waugh had a flaw because if you set the puck up behind the net, he would guess and he would be exposed to centering passes from behind the net. And if you watch some of the games where he had trouble, that was one of the things that teams tried to do to him. That's just a Montreal Canadiens example on a goalie. It didn't work very often, but that all you have to do is have it happen once or twice at the right time in a series, and potentially you can win. So they'll show different ways of attacking the goalie that have worked for other teams. That's one thing that will be part of what they'll do in their meetings.
If you're coaching a team that has one legitimate scoring threat, the Canadiens are in that situation, and you know the opposition is going to target that one threat. In your own mind, what kind of production do you expect? If player X, your threat, scored 40 goals in the regular season, you just kind of tell yourself, okay, that's not going to happen. I'm probably going to get half that production or 2/3 of that production. Do you work along those lines?
No, I have never heard that. You always hope for the best from all your players. You never really can predict on what they're going to do or what they're going to bring. We always used to try to get shot totals from players. You know, again, we talked to Mario about getting 5 to 7 shots a game. We talked to other players about getting 1 or 2 or 3 per game. Some guys we didn't even worry about. We didn't even talk to them about that. We talked to them about, you know, potentially hits, maybe 3 to 5 hits or different things for different players. So you try to, again, create these roles in different series. Different players. For Bob, I'll take you to the 92 Eastern Conference Final. We had an organizational rule that every time Ray Bourque touched the puck, you had to hit him in the hands with your stick. And they had to also hit him every time he touched the puck. And they were calling me Mr. Subliminal because I would run these meetings with the players. And after every point I'd make, because Boston played aggressive man-to-man defense, we would play a lot of aggressive cycle games, I'd always add at the end of every point I'd make and hit Ray Bourque. And at the end of it, they call me Mr. Subliminal. Bob Airey and Phil Bourque and Troy Loney, they punished Raymond Bourque. Those guys, that was their role in that series because Raymond was just so darn good.
Yeah. You can't hit anybody in the hands anymore. If it's not a slash, it's a hook.
It's different now. That's what I'm saying. It's a different. So there are different ways of doing things. So you can do some other things. Don't worry.
So on the surface, with the trio coming in, the Tourists and Stone and MacArthur trio that's been so hot down the stretch here, the Canadiens have a so-called checking line in Eller, Weiss, and Jacob DeLaRose, but they also have one of the better two-way centers in Thomas Bucanitz, who's flanked by two offensive players in Gallagher and Galchenyuk. How do you think they'll lean here, the Habs?
I wouldn't be too wrapped up in matchups if I were the Canadiens in this series. I'd be more worried about the defensemen that I was matching up rather than the forwards. See, I want to get constant offensive flow from my team because offense is obviously a problem. I focus more on trying to create offense and less about trying to play quote-unquote defense, and because of a matchup, you still have to play defense. Every line has to. But I'd worry more about changing two guys and worrying about my defense matchup and then because Dave Cameron's never been a head coach in an NHL playoff game. He's been a coach at a high level, by the way, whether it be major junior or the world junior, or even coaching in a playoff series as an assistant. But he's never had to run a bench in a playoff game at the NHL level. So it's a little bit different. And I would worry less about matchups and more about attacking them and forcing them to get a little bit paranoid on their bench.
So Subban and Markov against that trio.
That's what I would do.
Yeah. Now, before we get back to some of the key areas of concern for both teams.
Mont-Tremblant is in a good position regarding Montreal, travels-wise, and get the guys sticking together. And for team bonding and focusing, try to get away all the distraction as possible. So that's the decision that we took.
Extra day between games 3 and 4 in Ottawa. So we suspected they'd return to Montreal. As you just heard, Pierre, they'll actually be going to Tremblant between those games.
That's smart. It's really smart, especially this time of the year. It'll be quiet. The arena in Saint-Gervais, excellent. The ice is fantastic. I skate on it all summer, and it's really good in the summer. So, no, it's a good time of the year to go there. I'm sure they don't want to disclose where they're staying, but I'm sure it'll be very, very good for them.
I'm sure it's an area that's out of reach for most of us. Unless you're renting your pad, Pierre.
I'll let you stay at my house. You can go stay there if you want to. You don't have to rent it.
So the fact that you're game planning and you're war gaming against just one opponent here, one team, does that mean power play percentages, for example, are going to drop? Whereas, you know, 21% is considered really strong. Does that kind of dip down to a 17 or 18%?
Yeah, boy, that's a good point. Absolutely, Rod. That's usually what's so difficult. And that's one of the things watching the Washington Islanders series. The Islanders were 26th in the league on the penalty kill, and the Capitals were number one in the league on the power play. So it'll be interesting to see if the one trend holds and the Capitals can score in the power play and the Islanders can't break that down somehow, some way, then they're going to get lit up in this series. But if they can change that number, which I think they can because you're playing against the same power play every other night, and you get to understand tendencies a little bit more, then potentially that becomes a problem for the Capitals and a strength for the Islanders. So we'll see. But absolutely, usually power play percentages drop over the course of a playoff season because everybody becomes so used to the sequencing and the way you run your power play.
Doesn't this look bleak already for the Islanders, Pierre, without their best defenseman?
Well, everybody says Hamonic's their best, and I'm a big Travis Hamonic fan. I really like the young man a lot. Johnny Boychuk's pretty darn good, and Nicoletti's pretty darn good, and Calvin Behan's pretty darn good. It's not like they're poor on the back end. I think eventually they'll get Travis back. What my biggest concern is, I shared it with Rod before our conversation started, Mitch. I'm worried that because they don't have a lot of spread out offense, outside of their top line, that Washington is going to turn this into an amazing onslaught physically on John Tavares. And if he ever gets shut down in the series, now you're talking about a guy that was the second overall scorer in the National Hockey League this year. If he ever gets shut down, that takes away Kyle Oposo as an option. That takes away Jason Bailey as an option. And that takes away Anders Lee as an option. And if those guys go cold, they're not winning this series. And so it all circles around Tavares. And if they shut Tavares down, it's a big problem for the Islanders.
That crazy workload that Braden Holtby took on this year, does that catch up to them in the playoffs?
You're talking about Braden now?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Braden's fine. I was with him last week after they beat the Bruins and shut him out. He was pretty good. He played, over 70 games, I think, 73 games?
Yeah.
Braden was fine. I asked him about that after we were done the interview, and he said, no, he wasn't fatigued at all. He said maybe a year ago he would have been, but because of the style that the new goalie coach, Mitch Korn, has him playing, he didn't feel like he had extended himself over the course of these games. And remember, the Caps' defense is totally different than it was a year ago. So no, he didn't feel fatigued at all.
When you get pretty strict matchups in playoffs, it's one-on-one, it's man against man, and you get tested. So who can, you know, win that individual battle, which will lead to hopefully success as a team battle.
There's Barry Trotz on the eve of his first playoff game as the coach of the Washington Capitals. And I'm struck by how many people tend to forget at playoff time just where the level of intensity goes. And I understand a lot of teams, like most of the year, play at a pretty high level. but it's almost impossible to expect a team to keep their foot on the pedal for 80, 82 games, even maybe 75 games. And can you put into words what we're about to see, especially the first round, which has been lately so phenomenal at every level?
It's the hardest hitting. It's the fastest pace. It's probably the most barbaric of all the hockey series you'll see, just because there's so much of a physical toll gets taken. But the speed, one of the things that's really encouraging to me, and I think the league was really smart on this, this is the first time that I can remember in over 25 years, potentially, in any series in the first round, we will not have any back-to-backs, either to start a series or finish a series or in the middle of a series. So there's always a day off, and sometimes an extra day, as Michel Therrien was talking about in the Canadian series, where teams have a chance to, you know, basically rest up, heal, recuperate. Usually, over the course of a seven-game series, there's always usually a back-to-back at some point. There's none of that in any of the first-round series. So that's, I think, more encouraging, which will lead to better hockey, I think, as we go along.
Go ahead, Ron.
Are teams and coaches specifically still going to try and find a way to label themselves as the underdog here, Pierre? Because as we've discussed with parity, labeling teams favorites and underdogs is just stupid, because anyone could be a one, anyone could be an eight. As far as I'm concerned, there are no more underdogs.
Bruce Boudreaux said that the other day, I think. He's talking about that maybe they're the favorite. You know, I could see how people could
I could see why Bruce Boudreaux would be saying that at this time of year. I can understand him saying that.
but I believe he said that. So,
look, the Washington Capitals are favorite to win this series. They're legit favorites, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
there's
that's one.
That's not a knock on the Islanders. That's the Rangers, reality of the situation.
And the Penguins situation. The Rangers are favorite to beat the Penguins.
I would be shocked,
honestly, unless somebody went down on New York, I'd be shocked if the Penguins knocked out the Rangers here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Am I stupid?
Very few people outside of the city of Pittsburgh who would disagree with you.
Am I stupid, Rod?
I said
that there is a legitimate underdog in those two series?
The concept of being obsessed about labeling teams favorites and underdogs, okay? Nashville-Chicago. Would it be shocking
If Chicago gets Patrick Kane back, Chicago's winning this series.
Agreed. I don't think it would be shocking, though, if the Predators won. Unlikely. Don't think it would be shocking.
I'd be very surprised.
Anaheim and the Jets?
I'm going with Winnipeg.
Would you be shocked if the Ducks won?
Of all the series, I think somebody asked me the other day, is there one series you think could be an upset? I said, yeah, I think Winnipeg.
Wow, you made a pick? Come on.
No.
You actually made a
pick. I was asking if I thought there would be an upset. I said, potentially Winnipeg.
Yeah, people ask me, Pierre.
I feel that way.
Yeah, people ask me, how come Pierre won't? I say, are you kidding? When was the last time you actually made a prediction on a series?
I can't. Listen, the reason I don't pick, I'll tell you why. Because I work in a very, very interesting spot between very intense people. And if you pick one team over the other, you can't imagine what it's like to work down there. Trust me when I tell you, you're not sitting up in a booth where you're divorced from the action. You are in the middle of play. And I foolishly, at the beginning of this, when we started doing Inside the Glass in 06, picked teams to win. And trust me when I tell you, it was not very good
for a while.
And then I realized this has got to stop.
Yeah, but if you pay attention to every word that Pierre says on this show, on other shows, and during the broadcasts, you could figure it out because he's doing it subliminally. He is Mr. Subliminal.
That's funny. That's good.
All right, so you know where we're going to be tomorrow. We're going to be at the corner of Peel and St. Jacques.
Yeah, I'll be at the Verizon Center.
All right, I'll be following
what you're doing.
So we will get into the in-depth X's and O's and matchups and philosophies with most of the series tomorrow between 5 and 5:30.
Yeah, how are things going in Toronto? Is everything straightened out now?
Gallo, I believe that's for you.
We're not supposed to talk about that anymore.
Yeah, it's true. Pierre, I put a kibosh on that. All the Leafs. No more Leafs bashing, no more Bruins bashing. It's over.
Okay, that was gentlemanly of you.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know. The sun is shining today. Maybe tomorrow I'll feel differently.
Have a really good night. Awesome.
All right, you too.
You gentlemen. Take care.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.